Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I did more for this state than any president in history, and that piece of voted to impeach me.
Former President Trump visits Anchorage and denounces Senator Lisa Murkowski. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 11th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, more thunderstorms hit the interior as fire danger persists.
We were looking at quarter-size hail and also 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts through it. We were looking at some pretty high velocity signatures that were associated with that one.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Fire crews have reported progress on the Clear Fire in interior Alaska near the community of Anderson. The fire has destroyed one home, though, while a majority of people under evacuation orders are sheltering in place. The community of Anderson itself is not under an evacuation order, but 3 nearby subdivisions are. And evacuation orders were expanded to include structures that can be accessed by road, driveways, or trails on either side of the park's highway from mileposts 273 to 280. In total, 160 single-family structures are included in the evacuation order. Not all are occupied. The park's highway has remained open, though fire managers warned drivers passing through the area not to stop to watch firefighters working, saying parked vehicles could create a hazard. And some intense thunderstorms moved through areas of the central and eastern interior last night. National Weather Service meteorologist Caitlin Lardillo says severe thunderstorm warnings were issued for remote areas northeast of Minto and south of Esther. Lardillo says the radar signature for the second storm indicated extreme conditions.
We were looking at quarter-size hail and also 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts through it. We were looking at some pretty high velocity signatures that were associated with that one.
Lardillo says the Weather Service would like to hear from anyone who experienced the storms.
Anybody who could have been under those warning areas, any campers or anything like that.
Lardillo says there's potential for severe thunderstorm activity again early this week, followed by cooler, wetter weather as the week progresses.
There's going to be a front that kind of moves through from the northwest, from the Arctic coast down to the interior in the next couple of days. That's going to help to supply slightly cooler temperatures as well as increase in precipitation chance across the area.
Meanwhile, with many thousands of lightning strikes over the last 24 hours and gusty winds, red flag wildfire danger warnings remain in effect for a large area of the central and eastern interior. Fire Information Officer Jose Acosta says the state set a red flag record yesterday.
It was the 10th consecutive day of red flag warnings, and that surpassed a 9-day run in 2015.
Acosta says rain showers received so far have not been near enough to stop the wildfires.
It's still staying far drier than we would like because of the underlying moisture conditions in the soil and the trees and then the fuels.
More than 2.6 million acres have burned so far this season, and there are more than 250 active fires across the state. As of early this morning, 17 were being fought, including the Minto Lakes fire north of Fairbanks. That's where Information Officer Derek Teisinger says the blaze ignited 3 spot fires south of the Chattanooga River over the weekend.
With the aviation support, including Fireboss aircraft and helicopters, firefighters were able to pick up the spots and deploy hose around them.
Teisinger says firefighters also continue to assess and protect 63 threatened structures along the river, reinforce lines to buffer the Himalaya and Hayes Creek subdivisions, and mop up heat around native allotments on the fire's southwest side. More than 280 people are working the Minto Lakes fire, which has burned over 36,000 acres. Former President Donald Trump made good on a pledge to come to Alaska and punish U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski for turning against him in his last days in office. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports on his Saturday campaign rally in Anchorage.
Trump spoke for 90 minutes to a full house at the 5,000-seat Alaska Airlines Center, giving a version of his standard rally speech with added Alaska references. He endorsed Republican Kelly Chewbacca for U.S. Senate and let his disdain for Murkowski fly.
But she voted to impeach me, and I did more for this state than any president in history. And that piece of... voted to impeach me.
Trump silently mouthed the word garbage in that pause there. He shared his stage with Chewbacca, who praised Trump and accused Murkowski of helping President Biden.
Guess what, President Trump? She's become Biden's CEO. Yeah, she's his chief enabling officer. Anything Joe Biden wants done, Lisa Murkowski delivers it. Yep.
Trump also endorsed former Governor Sarah Palin, now a candidate for Alaska's open U.S. House seat. She had the crowd roaring and cheering as she vilified Democrats, government, and the media. Palin says this year's midterm elections are about good versus evil. And using the vocabulary of gun culture, she passed on words of wisdom she says she got from her dad.
Well, my dad's words exactly were, don't retreat. Reload.
When Trump endorsed Governor Mike Dunleavy, some boos were mixed in with the cheering. A number of rally attendees had campaign buttons promoting more conservative challengers Charlie Pierce and Christopher Kirka. Dunleavy wasn't there. A spokesman said he's traveling out of state on official business. Another sign of Trump's thirst for vengeance against Murkowski is that he castigated U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan for not denouncing Murkowski.
And Dan Sullivan should never, ever have given her an endorsement. Dan Sullivan should be ashamed of himself.
Murkowski's campaign responded after the rally with a few factual corrections, among other things, on the King Cove Road. Trump claimed credit for it.
Road, I got you Cove Road, or whatever the hell they call it. For 50 years, they've been trying to get the highway, right? I got that.
Murkowski and the entire congressional delegation have been trying to get a road for King Cove for years, and they advanced the controversial project during the Trump administration. Murkowski's campaign notes that it would be a single-lane gravel road, not a highway, and it's not built yet. Trump made no campaign announcement of his own, but he sounded like he might be a presidential candidate again. That would make 71-year-old Denise Dotson happy. She got up at 4 a.m. to drive in from Wasilla and was among the first in line for the Trump rally at 6 a.m.
Because I hope and pray to God that we can get him back in, because we need God back in our life. We need church back in our life. We need our kids to be taught properly in school, our history, instead of teaching them this gender shit.
Attacking liberal views on gender was a repeated theme at the rally, which at times seemed like a right-wing cultural celebration as much as a political event. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaskans have less than a week to register to vote in the August 16th special general election and the regular primary election. The deadline to register is Sunday, July 17th. Voters will decide who will serve the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term in the special general election. The three candidates in that race are Republican Sarah Palin and Nick Begich and Democrat Mary Peltola. That vote will be conducted using the state's new ranked choice voting system. For the regular primary, also scheduled on August 16th, voters will choose one of several candidates for U.S. House, U.S. Senate, and Alaska governor, as well as local legislative races. The top four candidates in each primary will move on to a ranked choice general election on November 8th. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a historic sailboat returns to Bristol Bay.
Those sails are really visual markers for our canning industry, labor issues, and independence for our fishermen.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Alaskans marched in four cities across the state Saturday to advocate for reproductive rights. The rallies came after the U.S. Supreme Court's decision late last month overturning the landmark case Roe v. Wade and ending the constitutional right to an abortion. KBBI's Hope McKinney reports that in Homer, hundreds of people marched through downtown with the message, abortion is health care.
Not the church, not the state. Women must decide their fate.
400 marchers carrying signs reading bans off our bodies and say no to Alaska's constitutional convention walked down Pioneer Avenue. The group chanted things like, abortion is health care and we want it now. Their message was amplified with megaphones.
Abortion is health care!
We want it now!
Abortion is health care!
We want it now!
Sandy Garrity is with the Women's March on Homer and helped organize Saturday's event with the Planned Parenthood Alliance advocates. Turnout was huge, she says.
I think our last march was about 150, 40 people. So this is totally exciting to see this many people come out and gather and be together.
The peaceful march brought ralliers young and old, some sporting t-shirts with uteruses painted on them, and others with stickers saying, my body, my choice. 76-year-old Linda Gorman remembers growing up pre-Roe v. Wade and fighting for reproductive rights. She says the fight seems worse today, with the intense political divide in this country.
I'm here because I saw this become legal in the 70s, and I'm appalled that the Supreme Court did this. So I'm here to support the women your age group because this should not be going on today. And how long is it going to take to undo it now? Really, it's going to take you young women to get out and really fight. And that's vote.
Gorman isn't the only person at the march with the message that people should get out and vote. Standing to my right is a man dressed as a giant pink uterus. He's wearing a 2-foot-tall blonde beehive wig atop his head, ovaries made of plastic bags swinging from his sides.
Would you like to speak to me about what you're wearing and why you're here?
My name is Steve McCaslin, and I'm a uterus. Now, in costume, but the moral of the story is we are going backwards with all this, and this is not these old white guys and old black guys and all guys telling a woman what she can do and what she can't do. So that's what's all this about. We've got to stand up and fight, or it's going to get even worse and worse and worse. So there you go. That's the reason why I'm here, in my uterus outfit.
Marchers weren't met with any resistance or counter-protesters. As they arrived at Homer's Wisdom, Knowledge, Faith, and Love Park, Claudia Haynes, CEO of the Kachemak Bay Family Planning Clinic, and Jenny Espenshade, director of the Kenai Youth Court, took to the mic. Espenshade, a lawyer, walked the audience through the legal aspects of how Alaska's constitutional right to privacy protects reproductive choice post-Roe. She explained that while abortion is still legal in the state, she's concerned that could change.
Does Alaska's express privacy right stand between us and that scenario? Perhaps. Having an explicit right to privacy in our state constitution is better than not having one, but it is not a fail-safe.
Haynes runs the Family Planning Clinic, the only provider of comprehensive reproductive health care on the Kenai Peninsula. The clinic offers a myriad of services, but abortion is not one of them. She thanked the marchers and said each one probably had their own reason for attending.
Right. And there are 400 different reasons, just like there are an infinitesimal number of reasons that people will seek abortion care. Every one of those stories, the many varied individual stories, is important. But frankly, none of our business. Let's keep it simple. Abortion care is health care.
A dozen members of the public also got up to share their personal stories at the open mic in the park's gazebo. One person shared her story about getting pregnant before Roe v. Wade was passed nearly 5 decades ago and crossing the border to Mexico to get an abortion. Another shared about her ectopic pregnancy that forced her to get a complete hysterectomy to remove her uterus and baby the night before Roe v. Wade was overturned just last month. Reporting in Homer, I'm Hope McKenney.
The state has okayed an Alaska company's application to get a prospecting permit for Augustine Island in Lower Cook Inlet. The final written finding means GeoAlaska can now sign for a 2-year permit to look for geothermal energy on the south side of the active volcano. Geothermal energy can be harnessed from the heat below the Earth's surface in the form of steam or water. It's a renewable resource since there's no shortage of heat there, and like other renewables, it can be used to heat homes or generate electricity. GeoAlaska is also prospecting for energy at Mount Spur west of Tyonek. But every volcano is different. Gwen Holdman is the director of the Alaska Center for Energy and Power in Fairbanks. She says Augustine might have more heat closer to the surface than Spur does.
So it actually could be a better bet to potentially find or figure out a way to develop a project out there. The challenge is that it's further away, it's more remote. And so the cost of actually connecting any kind of a geothermal development that you would have there to some place where you could feed it into the grid is a little bit more challenging for Mount Augustine. And that may be the limiting factor when it comes to the economics of developing a project.
Holdman notes that it can be hard and expensive to tap into geothermal energy resources, but she says she's excited about the project, and she says if volcanoes like Augustine can be developed, they show a lot of promise as a renewable energy resource in Alaska.
The availability of geothermal is much, much higher than a variable renewable resource like wind or solar or something like that. And so it can be a really, really ideal sort of renewable resource to develop and put on the grid.
Before it starts to drill, GeoAlaska needs to know whether a 3,000-acre parcel at the volcano has real energy potential. GeoAlaska plans to lease land from the state to look into that resource. Nearly 6 tons of marine debris collected from a remote island were offloaded in Ketchikan last week. The debris is bound for recycling in Seattle, but researchers hope it could also shed light on the kind of garbage that finds its way into the ocean. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
Crews are hauling enormous cloth bags full of garbage off of the fishing vessel Polar Lady, 11,500 pounds in all. It all came from Forester Island. That's an uninhabited islet 40 or so miles southwest of Prince of Wales Island, known as Gascu in the Haida language. Kit Cunningham is a technician with the State Department of Fish and Game's Marine Mammal Program and a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's studying the garbage as part of a research project for her thesis.
I want to know where the debris is coming from and how long it's been in the water. And one way we're kind of looking into that is if there's any growth on the marine debris.
That growth is known as biofouling. Things like algae, barnacles, and the like can offer clues about the origin of marine debris that washes ashore. Cunningham's latest trip to the island comes after she participated in a study of the island's stellar sea lions last year.
Always been quite a bit of trash and marine debris out there, so it was kind of the perfect candidate.
The work was funded by a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration grant program. Cunningham and two crews, working in shifts, spent just over a month picking up trash on the island. But why does so much debris pile up on this particular island in the North Pacific? Cunningham says the location may have something to do with it.
Something that I'm still learning about right now, but I would guess that, so since it's along continental shelf and a lot of currents go past through there, there's actually some really cool photos of storms rolling in and Forester Gascu is the first thing that they hit. So I think just a lot of currents and storms, it's kind of a perfect catching spot.
Among the debris were a few glass buoys and bottles. One even had a note inside.
It was actually someone writing to a loved one who had passed and just expressing a lot of, love and appreciation for that person.
But perhaps more interesting to Cunningham are the plastics, mostly old buoys, bottles, and styrofoam. She says her research into the debris could last into next summer. She will try and determine what kind of plastics were most common on the island. But she's not just studying the trash. While she was on the island, Cunningham collected the vomit samples from seabirds and fecal samples from the stellar sea lions. She'll be sending those samples to a professor to see if there are any microplastics in the animals' diets. If there are, she says she wants to learn if it's the same kind of plastic found on the island. She says she's expecting results later this year. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The Alaska Marine Highway System has reopened bars on two state ferries this year. It started serving beer and wine on two ships, the Matanuska and Kennecott, in late May and early June. Alaska Department of Transportation spokesman Sam Dapsevich says existing personnel are able to open the bars on those two ships for limited hours.
And we're serving like Alaskan Brewing Company beer and bottles and cans. We have some wines, seltzers. We're also serving like popcorn, chips, and pretzels. And we're working towards offering prepackaged mixed drinks. And so far, the response has been very positive. We've collected, through our online survey system, we've collected quite a few positive comments.
The Marine Highway closed bars on its ships in 2015 as a cost-saving measure, estimated to save the system $750,000 a year at the time. But Dapsevich says this year, ferry managers were looking for ways to improve the travel experience.
I think the consensus from our AMHS team was, yeah, let's if we can do it, let's do it. So we had some discussions with personnel, and we've also had some logistics that had to be worked out. As you know, we're already dealing with staffing shortages, so we wanted to see how we could do it without having to hire specific bartenders. And we came up with a plan. Everybody agreed to it. And now it's working, and it seems to be a good decision.
The Matanuska offers service between Bellingham, Washington, Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and Southeast Alaska this summer. The Kennecott has sailings from Bellingham to Kodiak. The service could expand to other ships operating this year. Fairbanks Eye Doctor is preparing an international trip to perform hundreds of cataract surgeries. Dr. Catherine Johnson is recruiting other doctors and fundraising for supplies to go to remote sites in Ghana. KUAC's Robin reports.
To have age-related cataracts removed and replaced with a plastic lens, many interior residents come to Mountain View Eye Center in Fairbanks. Dr. Catherine Johnson has been working to take her skills to places that don't have the comforts and technology of her ophthalmology practice.
It is among the most humbling experiences I've ever had in my life. When you go and do work in developing countries, you are overwhelmingly aware of how much we have. The level of disease you see is staggering, and the level of poverty you see is staggering.
She says there are 20 million people with cataracts who become blind, mostly with age. In 2013, Johnson co-founded an organization that focuses on cataract-related blindness called Gift of Sight with another eye surgeon in Nebraska.
We can put a very rudimentary stock-based lens and take someone from light perception vision, which means they can see the sun, but they can't see the hand in front of their face. And we can give them 20/30, 20/40 vision for $25.
They have set up temporary cataract surgery clinics from Nepal to sub-Saharan Africa and performed the 10-minute sutureless surgeries on thousands. In 2019, Johnson and staff members from her clinic traveled to Belize. This time, she's traveling to Ghana. Ghana is more developed than some of its West African neighbors, but most of the 31 million Ghanaians don't have medical care outside the capital city of Accra.
So the resource and access to care are extremely limited. There's one city with a decent program in a giant country of tens of millions.
Johnson plans to make her first week-long trip in November, then will travel again in the spring and following summer. She'll be working in an international partnership, including the charities Gift of Sight and the Himalayan Cataract Project, to open a new hospital.
the opportunity to really grow that from the ground up and develop a residency program, train the doctors, go out and like know the area. I can see it in my head and it's just so brilliant.
She says she takes the time away from her Fairbanks practice to conduct mass surgery clinics in developing nations because she can.
To be blind in a developing country is just, it's inconceivable to us who live with the resources that we have here. When you can't see, people need to come give you food, take care of you, walk you to the bathroom. Like basic functions you can't actually do because you would walk into a wall or the fire. That's real blindness in developing countries. The next day, you can take care of the children, you can help cook, you can walk yourself, you can become a productive member of society again. It's a multiplier. It's one of the few things in medicine that truly multiplies the benefit.
Johnson says her staff at Mountain View Medical Center has been very supportive, including organizing fundraising efforts. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Before 1951, all commercial fishermen in Bristol Bay had to fish on sailboats. Today, the entire commercial fishery is motorized. But as KDLG's Brian Venois reports, a few enthusiasts are bringing one historic vessel back to the bay.
For more than 60 years, sailboats dominated Bristol Bay's commercial fishery and motorized vessels were illegal. Then, in 1951, the federal government finally allowed motorized fishing vessels in Bristol Bay.
And I think it's literally down to like 50 or 46 boats or something like that in 1954, and then they just disappear.
That was Larice Egli, the director of the Bristol Bay Historical Society Museum in Naknek. She says almost immediately, sailing was made obsolete for the fishery. By 1952, powerboats outnumbered sailboats 4-1. In less than 5 years, every commercial vessel had a motor. This year, historians are bringing the sailing tradition back to the bay with a vessel named the Libby McNeil Libby 7-6. Tim Troll is the executive director of the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust and one of the sailing crew. They launched from Homer on July 5.
Launched this morning at about 9. It was beautiful, nice sunny day, very calm weather.
The sailboat has crossed the Cook Inlet, sailing towards Naknek.
The boat is on its way. It's sailing quite nicely right now. Four guys aboard, and just looks beautiful out there.
Troll said in an email that they made it to their first stop in Williamsport on Wednesday night. Egli says the journey commemorates an iconic period in the fishery's history.
Those sails sailing out on the horizon of our bay are really visual icons, and they're one of those grounding visual markers for both our canning industry, for the labor issues and independence of our fishermen, and also for our indigenous story and our community.
It will visit Levelock on July 17, and the vessel is scheduled to arrive in Naknek on July 19. In Dillingham, I'm Brian Venois.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Robin in Fairbanks, Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Hope McKinney in Homer, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, and Brian Venois in Dillingham. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.